Monster Man, episode 286, Frog, comma, Giant, comma, Poisonous, to Hulk.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the animals section of Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons. Unlike some of the monster books that we've covered previously, Creature Catalog is divided up not only alphabetically, but also according to creature type. So we're currently working our way through the section on animals. Today, we're going to get started by looking at the frog, comma, giant, comma, poisonous. Now, I've talked about giant frogs before. I think that they are one of the giant animal monsters that works really well. The idea of getting globbed with a frog's sticky tongue is kind of gross, and it sort of scales no matter what size you are. So, in this system, frogs can drag smaller creatures. So, this is anything like dwarf-sized or smaller, so presumably that would also include halflings and gnomes. It doesn't swallow them whole, it just drags them over to its mouth where it can bite them or, you know, have at them with its poisonous skin. But that idea is a pretty good one. It also drags them quite slowly, so if you're hit with the frog's tongue, you get dragged 5 feet around, and it can hit a target up to 15 feet away. So it can take you a couple of rounds before you get within biting distance of the frog, and helpfully, this section also includes rules for trying to sever the frog's tongue while it is pulling you toward its mouth. To me, the strangest idea in this whole thing is, so a frog's tongue can take 6 hit points worth of damage, presumably it's got pretty high AC, right? It's hard to make called shots. So you're a halfling rogue, and as you are being dragged toward the frog's mouth, you are slashing at it with your dagger. Let's say you hit the tongue and only inflict 3 points of damage. Is the frog going to keep going in the hopes that it's going to drag you to its maw before you can land another unlikely hit on it? Imagine that you were sticking your tongue out. Let's say it was the first day of snowfall, and someone came along and slashed at your tongue with a knife. Didn't even hit it, but just took a swing at it. Would you keep your tongue out of your mouth on the grounds that your tongue had not been severed? I feel like I would pull it in about as quickly as I could. This is one of the problems with animal monsters, which is that, in general, animals don't fight humans. Not unless they have an advantage that basically means it's not a fair fight. I do feel like, if there was a scene in a fantasy movie from the 80s, if you saw Warwick Davies being dragged toward a giant frog's mouth by its sticky tongue while he frantically slashed at it with a short sword, you'd be scarred for life. Either that or it'd be your favorite, depending on how much of a weirdo you are. So I think that the frog, comma, giant, comma, poisonous has got some pretty good things to recommend it. One of the things that I think is interesting, you know, from a strictly ecological perspective, frogs are poisonous in order to discourage predation, right? Like, animals that secrete poisons through their skin generally do so to protect themselves from predators. Therefore, the existence of the frog, comma, giant, comma, poisonous either means that normal-sized poisonous frogs are being increased to gigantic size by something, or alternatively, that there is something in this swamp big enough to eat not just frogs, but giant frogs. So I think that that kind of poses an interesting question. Maybe it's a boobry. Remember the boobries? Maybe it's a froghemoth. I don't know. But I feel like this is a good swamp monster. And I like, you know, I was envisioning it as a big, ugly, toady kind of thing. You know, in my mind, giant frogs, I always kind of see them as looking a little bit like King Wart from Super Mario Bros. 2. You know, with just the big gullet. But actually, maybe it'd be cool to have it in that colorful kind of poison arrow frog sort of look. Yeah. Next up, we have the Gargantua. Now, I mentioned the Gargantua last time because the Gargantua is a giant fish, but it is not a fish, comma, giant that belongs in the fish, comma, giant entry. Don't ask me why. Gargantua is basically a giant carp-like fish, and it has the pretty cool ability. It has a sort of dragon's breath equivalent, which is that it can spit out a jet of water, which actually does no damage, but just chucks you around the place, right? So if it spits you out of the water and you land on some rocks or something, then you could take some damage, but the water itself doesn't do you any harm. I quite like Gargantua, actually, you know? I like the idea of a monster having an attack that is just kind of there to, like, change the tactical situation. You know, with giant monsters, that's always a problem because ultimately what you're going to get with a giant fish is either you're in an underwater sequence, because we're told that Gargantua, like, swim along the bottom of the sea, kind of eaten up, everything they find along there, right? They're bottom feeders. And what that means is that they might eat up some sunken treasure. So either you're kind of opportunistically prospecting for sunken treasure within this giant fish, or alternatively, you went to go look for the blue jewel, which, you know, sank to the bottom with some treasure galleon, only to discover the gargantuan had eaten the whole thing up, and now you have to go get it out of his tummy. Blue jewels being presumably indigestible. So in that situation, what you're either going to get is a combat where it's basically a bunch of characters, like, swimming or riding their aqueous steeds or whatever, and they're all just kind of surrounding the fish and pounding on it with their tridents and what have you. Or Gargantua's fighting some characters that are in a ship, and they're all just standing up in the mizzen top and shooting at it with their crossbows or casting spells at it. It's not that exciting. So the fights like this against very large monsters tend to be quite static. So having the monster have the ability to move people around is a lot of fun. The name Gargantua, but what seems to happen is that another usage of the name becomes more commonplace, and indeed, that usage is earlier than this one. So in 1985, when Oriental Adventures comes out for AD&D, I know, Oriental Adventures, neither the title nor the content is terrific. There's a book that would take a good deal of work to salvage, but that's not what we're talking about today, other than that it uses the name Gargantua. And Gargantua there is used to describe various kinds of giant animal. So, for example, a giant moth, or a giant lizard, you know, maybe as some kind of giant pterosaur, right? I mean, they're kaiju. In its kind of Asian-inspired setting, naturally, D&D, you know, robbing as it does opportunistically from popular culture, wanted to include Godzilla and equivalents. And so, therefore, Gargantua became the D&D term for a kaiju. You know, on the one hand, I'm not against that. I do think that there's room for whatever kind of lunacy you can shoehorn into a D&D game. The idea of D&D kaiju doesn't necessarily appeal. Maybe it's a question of the scale. Like, it's hard to think what the little toy tank equivalent would be. You know, kaiju are always smashing skyscrapers and suspension bridges and other monuments to man's technological hubris. And I don't feel like there's a lot of man's technological hubris in a fantasy setting, but I could be persuaded. So yeah, that's Gargantua. It's got that association between giant monsters and elemental powers that we just talked about in the most recent special episode about dragons, although I suspect that we're meant to think that its water spout power is just that it sucks up a big mouthful of water and then spits it out. Finally, we have the hawk. You got your regular hawk, and you got your hawk, comma, giant. Once again, it's interesting to see that the hawk, comma, giant, like, it's big, but it's not gigantic. It's giant by hawk standards. It says that they are the size of a large dog or a small pony, and if you saw that hawk in real life, you'd be freaked out. That's a big hawk. But it's not absolutely colossal. I like the idea of a giant hawking with one of these things. You know, if giants are parodies of human behavior, then they would engage in human behavior like hawking, particularly if you think of, like, cloud giants, who are pitched as kind of the aristocrats of the giant world, like the civilized giants, you know, up there in their cloud castles, as opposed to a bunch of, like, brutish hill giants or militaristic fire giants. You know, cloud giants and storm giants are a little more highbrow. So the idea of a cloud giant having, you know, a muse full of hooded jest, is that the word I'm looking for? Hawks, comma, giant is pretty cool. That would be a pretty cool location for you to go exploring in the cloud castle. Honestly, cloud castles can be made a lot of fun simply by looking at the various odd things that one might find in a medieval castle and then extrapolating them to gigantic size. Because there's lots of sort of boring everyday ordinary functions in a castle that we don't really think about. You know, they're not what, you know, when you imagine a castle, you're imagining towers and battlements and so forth, but there's a lot of stuff going on there. Anyway, that is about all the animals, giant or otherwise, that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be taking a look at a range of animals from different time periods. We're going to look at the lizard, comma, giant. We're going to look at the magpie. We're going to look at the megatherium, which is not in the same category as the titanotheres, for reasons. And if we have time, we're also going to look at the octopus, comma, giant, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License.
Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.